We also get some illuminating evidence for nomads. Various tribes would encamp near Mari for a few months at a time, and these tribes were very well known to the king. So there's a close interaction between these groups that we don't normally get much evidence about and the people of Mari. Smaller details also plagued Zimri Lim. A curious letter describes the capture of a lion on the roof of a house, and the lion was being sent to Zimri Lim in a wooden cage, and this presumably was a present that Zimri Lim would keep who knows where in his palace. I've always wondered what happened to the lion. You also might remember that it was Zimri Lim who constructed the ice house. We found that foundation stone that talks about how he created this new and impressive ice house that would keep his drinks cool in the summer. And Zimri Lim also received truffles from a farmer. So like his predecessor, Yasma Adad, Zimri Lim had a very rich diet. The texts from Mari demonstrate the very complicated diplomatic and military history of this era, as well as the palace culture. After Hammurabi attacked the city for the second time, this historical trading center effectively disappears. We know that some people did live in the area after it was destroyed, but it never regained its prominence and its wealth as a link between northern and southern Mesopotamia and also with Syria. We never know what happens to Zimri Lim, and he seems so worried and so beset by problems that it's hard not to feel sorry for him in comparison to Hammurabi, who has such a bad temper. He seems like a big bully. And I've always felt very close to Zimri Lim because of his anxiety and all of the problems that he had to worry about, his family life, whether his daughters were happy in marriage, whether his people had enough food, what was Hammurabi doing. All of this kept him up at night and also kept him consulting oracles on a regular basis. This history of Mari also serves to remind us of the broader historical changes that are associated with Hammurabi's rule. Remember that it's under Hammurabi that we shift to large regional states. That meant it would be much more difficult for even a good ruler of a city-state like Zimri Lim to withstand an opponent like Hammurabi. So the big man who's at the head of a big army really starts to dominate our history at this point. The letters preserved in the palace also show the many problems, such as questions of justice that a king would resolve. All of these cases that required the intervention of the river ordeal to settle whether a person was guilty or innocent of adultery or any other property damage or whatever the problem was, show that justice and settling legal disputes was an important role for the king. In the next lecture, we will examine several of the surviving law codes associated with kings, specifically Hammurabi, which is probably the best known law code, and we will see what matters were most contentious and how rulers in different eras tried to resolve them. Mostly, there would be fines enacted in order to settle the dispute. So say a neighbor's wall fell down and damaged your house, then he would have to pay a fine. But we'll also get some insight into the social organization of a city-state or a regional state and see that there are different levels of society and that the punishment varied according to your status in a particular city.